sign up for the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog. Go to www.sdexpo.com.
Hello, world, and welcome to Ask Udi, the podcast where listeners get their questions on SOA and web services answered. This is your host, Udi Dahan, bringing you the cold hard facts you need to make decisions about SOA. I am the software simplest, helping you keep it simple. This podcast is brought to you exclusively by Dr. Dobbs Journal, leading the computer press in covering practical technology, languages, platforms, and tools, online at www.ddj.com. Also, don't forget to visit my blog, www.udidahan.com. That's UDIDAHAN.com for more information. Well, this week, although we have been getting tons of mail, I wanted to take a step back, or rather a step up, and talk about the process of developing a service-oriented architecture, or rather you could call it service-oriented analysis and design. Now, from my experience, really the best way to get the IT business alignment that SOA was supposed to bring, or is supposed to bring, is to start your analysis from the business side. This includes a mapping of the business capabilities, really what the business does, what departments or business units make up the corporation, which is really in the realm of enterprise architecture, so don't be surprised that there's an overlap between EA and SOA. So once you go around mapping your business capabilities, finding out what the business does, who's in charge of what are the business processes, like we talked about last week, there is quite a lot of business process management concepts in common between EA, SOA, and BPM. So after you've gone through the process of mapping your business capabilities and your business processes, you don't really have to go, you know, all the way through, map them all out, create enormous diagrams according to whichever enterprise architecture framework you prescribe to. As you go along, start looking for things that clump together. A good way to start out is having a service per business unit or per department, and the business processes that each of those services will be in charge of will be, in most cases, the business processes that the business unit is in charge of. So far we really haven't said very much, you know, have your service equal your business units, but it really is a good way to start. Now, one of the ways that you can sort of validate your services as you go along is by taking each one of the business processes that you go through. Now, these business processes can go through people and computer systems if they're legacy systems or systems that are under development today, and go through each one of the business processes, and as much as you can, try to keep those business processes localized to a single service. If we find that a given business process has to jump between a number of services, then probably our service decomposition isn't really that good, and we may look at combining the two services that the business process jumps between them into a single service. Now, there are cases when we have business processes that really do have to cross the entire enterprise, even at a business level. What we'll often find with these business processes is that they take a really long time to complete, involve lots of people, lots of systems, in which case, if you do find business processes like that that cross a bunch of your services, don't go consolidating all your services back into single Uber service. That's not what we're looking for. Another way to sort of realize if you have poor service decomposition is by doing analysis of the data. If you see that the changes that have to be made to data as a result of a specific business process have to be transactional, and you find that the owner of the different parts of the data, or the different owners, reside in different services, that's also a good sounding board to find out that you have too many services, or that you haven't separated the responsibilities of your services correctly. So those are really the two main ways of going at it. One, sort of top-down, business-wise capabilities, create those services. Another way is more bottoms-up, sort of look at your data, look at what goes along, how the business process is affected. Transactions are a big deal. I've been talking about this before. You should not have transactions crossing service boundaries. That is a really bad smell, to use the term from the agile world. Long-running transactions are something that you should pretty much avoid. You should be looking at workflows that affect bits of data in each service at each point in time when they run. These are the long-running workflows that will probably map to your business processes. Okay, so assuming you've done this entire process, you have your services, you should probably have between 10 to 20. If you have a little bit less than 10, that's no big deal. If you see you're getting more than 20, I don't know. I'd be careful. More than 50, I'd say you're way out of the park. You've created too many smaller or fine-grained services. Another way to realize if what you're looking at is really a service or is something else is that services, by and large, have both data and behavior. In that way, they're very similar to objects in object-oriented programming. So, conversely, if you find a service that all it has is functionality, as in check address service or order validation service, these services are pretty much just functions. They may be very complex functions. They may have lots of smarts in them. They may be made up of business rules. But the fact that they do not have data means that they are not a service. You can view them as a component, but in essence, they are functions. On the flip side of it is services that have only data. Now, these have become somewhat popular in the view of enterprise entity aggregation, where we want to consolidate all the information about a specific entity, say a customer, into one specific service. Now, the kinds of functionality that this data-oriented service would expose would be something very similar to a database. Insert a new customer, update a customer, get a customer, delete a customer. Now, there are two reasons why this is not a good service. Again, like we said before, because it is primarily data-oriented, the only functions it supports are functions that are directly related to the data, no business functions or business capabilities whatsoever. And the flip side of it is, of course, when it comes to transactions. In order to perform a business process, or, you know, just the smallest bit of business functionality, anything that has to touch customer will have to open a transaction that encompasses our customer service. So, two knocks against the entire data service, one knock against the functionality service. Services should have data and behavior. We're talking about business-level behavior, not simple, low-level, database-oriented behavior. Okay, so those are the factors that really go into splitting up your services and doing a validation on them. Now, services are not monolithic beasts. Like I said before, even at the business level, seeing that the service really maps to a business unit or a department, our business units and departments are not monolithic entities. They have people in them, they have groups in them, and each group is part of or is responsible for a specific section of the business capability. For instance, if we look at a sales service or a sales department, we may find that the groups or the people involved are split up according to specific business lines. For instance, we may have salespeople in charge of enterprise customers, salespeople in charge of private customers, salespeople that are in charge of whatever. Now, this is also one of the big things that, once again, goes as a knock against the entire data-oriented services, is that these lines that we split our services along are really business oriented. So if we could look at a service as being a business capability, inside that service we would find specific business components, where each business component is responsible for corporate customers or private customers. We will not often find that the business components will be in charge of only customers, and that business component is only in charge of orders, and this business component is only in charge of products, again for the same reason that we don't want transactions crossing them. Okay, a business component is almost the technical level, But we're not quite there yet. On top of all that, we have something that I've been talking about previously, which are autonomous components. Now, the reason that we would want to split up a business component into a number of autonomous components really has to do with technical aspects. If we're talking about scalability, robustness, or reliability, our desire to scale out our entire handling of private customers because we have a lot of them, whereas our corporate customers, we don't have that many of them, we don't have such a high load on the services that are dealing with that, so we may want to have those all those other services be on one server, while all our private customers go to separate servers. Okay, so let's go back again. Services are the high-level business capabilities. Inside services, we split them up business-wise according to the business lines. The best way to do that is look at the business, look at the department, see what the people are in there, see what the groups are in there, what their business responsibilities are. Those become your business components. Business components in this way are also loosely coupled. If you look at a department, you'll see that the people in charge of private customers really are loosely coupled. They don't really require much interaction with the salespeople involved with corporate customers. So this is our next level of divide. Finally, when we want to go and implement our business components, we would use autonomous components, which involve messages, the specific message types, which map to the what are the kinds of things, what are the activities that we can perform on private customers, what are the activities we can perform on corporate customers. So we have our specific message types for each business component, which will then turn to the specific message types, which go to the autonomous components. Of course, we will have the message handlers for each one of those types, and possibly we may have a common database for the entire service, or we may have a common database for each business component. At the lowest level, or rather at the highest level of granularity, we may find a single database or a single database instance for each autonomous component. Again, autonomous components come from a technical view of the world. What are the scalability requirements? What are robustness requirements? Business components and services are high-level business entities. So that's really the 30,000-foot view of SOA, and really how we're going to expect SOA to bring us IT business alignment. The reason, like I said, by starting at the business and drilling our way down. So that wraps it up for this week. If you do have a question, don't hesitate. Send me an email at podcast@udidahan.com. That's UDIDAHAN.com. I know I've been getting lots of questions. I will get them answered either on the blog or on next week's podcast. So keep them coming. I haven't forgotten about them. That's it for now. Until next week, keep it simple. Bye-bye.
For the SD Expo mailing list to receive conference updates and the 2006 conference catalog, go to www.sdexpo.com.